Testament to our God. Our God is big. Our Bible readings on page 561 of the Pew Bibles, if you want to follow along, we're reading just the first eight verses of the Psalm, Psalm 34. I will extol the Lord at all times. His praise will always be on my lips. My soul will boast in the Lord. Let the afflicted hear and rejoice. Glorify the Lord with me. Let us exalt his name together. I sought the Lord and he answered me. He delivered me from all my fears. Those who look to him are radiant. Their faces are never covered with shame. This poor man called to the Lord, and the Lord heard him. He saved him out of all his troubles. The angel of the Lord encamps around those who fear him, and he delivers them. Taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man who takes refuge in him. Amen, and may God give us understanding what he wants to say to us through his word. Well, it feels like home because we have such a good thing going on in this part of the city, so that while I was at KLM for 14 years, we did so much together, and I, from what I hear, that's still happening. And I had a spell at Bristow too during their last vacancy, so I would encourage you to go there. It's a good place to be, and there are good people there. I've been invited as part of your bicentenary celebrations of this building, built in the year of Waterloo, as it happens. But we know that our faith is not about bricks and mortar, and in fact that. But Liberton Church is on a hill, and you do see it from a long distance. Well, that's how we're meant to be. We're meant to be like a city set on a hill, as Jesus says. You are the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before men, that they may see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven. And one of the ways we let our light shine, and it's not one that we kind of are at ease doing, is telling our story. If we've encountered God, and if God has come to us, maybe for the first time long ago, and it has made a mark on us, and it's changed our direction, and it means so that it means something to us even today, all these years later, not forgetting what he's doing in our lives today, then we want to make it known. And making it known can seem to be, you know, I've been on all these faith-sharing courses, and, that's quite daunting, and it's a bit like David when he was going to fight Goliath, and Saul thought he was doing him a favor by providing him with a suit of armor. But David had his own way, and it was a natural way. And the most natural way of sharing your faith is by telling your story. I don't know whether you've noticed, and sometimes, you know, they become shaggy dog stories, but the way we talk to one another is often in terms of story. You know, I was in the bank and someone said to me, and she pushed in and so forth and so on, and there's a story coming. And actually, we listen to stories, we like stories. And the other thing about stories is that they're from the heart, they're genuine. They're talking about things that have happened to us. You know, we're not talking about the dim and distant past. We're not talking about something academic. We're talking about something that has affected us And if it's faith, then affected us very deeply. So this is really, in shorthand, so you can suck your pan drop and go to sleep for the next few minutes, this is about sharing our story. But I'm doing it from Psalm 34. I love the Psalms. They're so direct, they're so honest. Some are full of praise, but many are full of struggles. And we have struggles with in our lives. And they're often, but not always, in the first person. I cried to the Lord, and he heard me. It can help to know the history and the background of the psalm, but you don't need to. And you can easily identify with what the psalmist is saying. And there's something immediate about them. And we can put ourselves in the situation because the situations aren't made explicit. But we've worried, we've had fears, we've felt at the end of our tether. And the psalmist expresses all that. Indeed, in many of the schemes, Bible schemes, you read the Psalms all the time and you read other scriptures with them. Because it's in the form of a psalm, it may not be immediately obvious, but Psalm 34 is one man's personal experience. This was how he had felt, and this was how the Lord helped him, how God helped and delivered him. This poor man called, and the Lord heard him. He saved him out of all his troubles. And really, that could, or perhaps even should, be the testimony of all of us. This poor man, or woman, or young person, called, and the Lord heard him. He saved him out of all his troubles. I was a very lonely teenager, affected by my parents' marriage and affected by moving from the Midlands up to Scotland and without really any friends. One way to have made friends would have been to be sporty. And I tried, honestly. But insult was added to injury when at the age of 14 and a half in September, when it's just too warm to be playing rugby, and as a number eight, middle of the back forward, I got my front teeth kicked out one day, and I got dropped from the team the next. So I was a bit adrift. I managed to make up some of that ground by the fact that I ended up walking and climbing Munros, and that put me in very good company because the rector at Edinburgh Academy was a great Herbie Mills. He was a walker too. And in pursuit of that, I went to an SU camp. And I can remember sitting on the 23 bus, chugging up Dundas Street, turning to my friend, And saying to him about the Bible and about the postcards, oh, you don't need these. I think I was probably trying to be big. But he nodded quite solemnly and said, well, yes, you do. Anyway, I went up to Ballater, and my only thought in my mind was to climb hills. And what a welcome. I'd just been at Cadet Force Camp. And that was all a big ego trip, you know. Who could get drunk? Who could get off with the local girls? Who could throw thunder flashes into the pools and blast out salmon? So I arrived at camp, and I couldn't believe it. Because the first person I met who welcomed me, and I always thought prefects kind of were there to boss you about, was a prefect, an effer, as they call them in the academy. And that welcome stayed with me. And I found that the rest of the camp was like that. I was shown friendship and understanding. The camps were very sporty. I'm not very sporty. But every effort was made to make me feel welcome at home. And I always say to people that my patron saint is, if I had one, is Zacchaeus. He was shown friendship and it changed his life. And it changed my life too. And really, I'm still, you know, you get these little cars that undergo this the challenge of how far you can go on a gallon of fuel, you know, and they do 300 miles or 400 miles, and they're doing more and more all the time. Well, honestly, I've been going in the strength of that ever since, and it's longer than I like to think. Personal experience. I know we don't preach ourselves, but Jesus Christ and Him crucified. But what we're preaching when we give our testimony, when we give our witness to Christ, is actually Christ's work in our lives. So we're not saying, look at me. We're saying, look at Him and look at what He has done for me and what He can do for you. And I just want to encourage you to share your story. It's obviously a story that has many chapters to it. It has a story that goes up to the very present. I know that tonight when I go to church at West Hales, there will be words of testimony. Well, people will be saying how they got on with our Stop for the One, going out into the shopping centre and speaking to people. And the opportunities that have been given there. But tell your story. Telling your story, testimony, is something that kind of missed the Church of Scotland, but it's very well known in other churches. And sometimes it was something rather stilted. It was something about your conversion, about how you came to Christ. And that's what I've just told you. And so it was about the beginning, and it was fixed, and there was one old man who must have lived in a cottage, and he took his Bible out one day, and he kept the notes about his story in the Bible, but there had been a mouse in the house, and the man cried out, "The mouse has been at my testimony." But actually, the mouse doesn't have to be at your testimony, because you can be adding to your testimony all the time, proving the faithfulness of God. And I honestly believe it's one of the most powerful things that we can do. I have always had people prick up their ears and listen to my story. Sharing our story is not about boasting. And it often involves admitting that to the fact that we're not as strong as we look. And that's what the psalmist does in Psalm 34. And that's why the sort of half title to the sermon is "This Poor Man." Here is not someone with all the answers, everything and everything under control. He's poor and needy, and he's not afraid to say so. Somebody has said, evangelism is one beggar telling another beggar where to find bread. What's your story? Do you have one? Has God touched you? Do you share it? And the time that God is most at work in our lives, a pity this, but it is when there's trouble. But then otherwise, we tend not to seek Him. We tend to drift away. But it focuses our minds and it turns us to God when there's trouble. So we can be thankful for that. I'm sure that one of the lessons of prayer is that God seldom seems to hear our polite prayers, but He does hear and answer our desperate cries. Someone I once knew used to say, God does not reveal Himself to casual inquiry. And Jesus says, you will find me when you seek me with all your hearts. As there was for the psalmist, there is often has to be a crisis. Our crisis is God's opportunity, as has been proved again and again. And as you'll see if you look at your own life. But it's a surprise to learn who this poor man is. It's David. I sought the Lord, and he answered me. He delivered me from all my fears. David? Afraid? Never. The boy who had fought off lions and bears, the boy who had killed Goliath single-handed and with a single blow, Israel's hero, who even just before this psalm, the incident in this psalm, had been lauded and praised by the people, he didn't seem to know the meaning of the word fear. But he did. And for the simple reason that we're all afraid of something. A few are afraid of everything, and that's sad. Some are afraid of many things, nervous people. Most of us are afraid of a few things, and the odd person is afraid of only one. But no one is afraid of nothing. You'll have probably heard it said that in the Bible it says, do not fear 365 or 366 times. Well, it's a nice thought. I've an idea that it's not quite true, but the sentiment is true, and that God does say to us again and again, do not be afraid. Even David. What had gone wrong? Why had his courage deserted him when he'd been so brave and so bold for God? Perhaps he couldn't quite believe the settled hatred of Saul. You know, Saul blew hot and cold. Sometimes he was angry and sometimes he was not. But now it had settled into this envy and hatred of David. And at this point in his life, David was alone. Later, he would gather quite a following. But at this point, he was alone. He had fled from Saul. And also, he had it on his conscience that the priests he had visited, who had given him bread and the sword of Goliath to fight with, had been killed by Saul's men as they chased after David. David had been under prolonged strain. Maybe this is something that's true of someone here, or more than someone. But it had taken its toll. And it's only when you stop, only when you look down, like Peter walking on the water, that you end up in a state of fear or paralysis. David feared for his life, but God delivered him. We think we have to be brave. We think we have to be strong when we're telling our story. But God's way is different. He says, my strength is made perfect in your weakness. People will listen more if we speak about our struggles, about our vulnerability, if we pretend to be stronger than we really are. So don't be afraid to show your weakness, because other people are weak too, and they say, all right. It rings bells with them. They understand that. They don't understand this sort of big, strong, macho image. They're put off with that because that's not the world they inhabit. He delivered me from all my fears, was what David could say. And those who look to him are radiant. This is really a different point, but it's the same point. That God aims at our transformation. God aims at our transformation. He wants what he has done for us to show so that others may see it. Probably David's thinking of the time when Moses went up the mountain, met with God, and came down, and his face was glowing, and they had to cover it until the Shekinah, the glory, left him. And we are called to be radiant. Not to grin, not to be cheesy, not to be falsely strong, as I say, but to be genuinely, to radiate the love and the goodness of God. That's, if you have an old bar fire and you go into the house and you flick the switch to turn it on, you expect that element to begin to glow and to give out heat. You don't expect it to stay cold and gray. But sometimes we stay cold and gray. And I suppose I thought I had a good excuse for it. A man called G.K. Chesterton was once challenged about his claim to be a Christian. "Mr. Chesterton, you say you're a Christian, but you're not a very nice person." To which Chesterton replied, and he had this reputation for being, you know, a real bruiser, "You have no idea how much worse a person I would be if I were not a Christian." Well, we know what he means, but we can't hide behind that. Those who look to the Lord are radiant. And then, and it's an invitation again, is very simple and very easy, much more easy than we make out when we have courses for this and courses for that. The invitation is, come and see. You know, that's how the disciple band was formed. Come and see. And the invitation is, taste, and it's in the psalm, taste and see that the Lord is good. In what we do and in the ways we do it, and it's not always easy, and it ends up with people seeking God for themselves. But we're trying to get people to encounter God for themselves. We want them to experience God in their lives. We want them to experiment. The best way I can put it is in the words from the psalm: "Oh, make but trial of his love, experience will decide. How blessed are those and only those who on the Lord rely." There's experiment. You know, I mean, a lot of people's story do begin with when they've heard people speak about faith, and at the point where they became a Christian, they've had to give it a go. They've had to try it. They've had to experiment. Lord, if you're there. And of course, God loves a challenge, and he so often answers. A significant move of God in the 20th century began with a man in the trenches during the First World War. And he prayed that prayer, which we may have prayed even though we've not been in the trenches. Lord, if you deliver me, I'll serve you all my life. And I guess a percentage of people forget about that prayer and about that promise. But others followed through with it. And this man followed through with it, and out of it came a move of God which greatly blessed Scotland. There's a time and a place for the facts. That's the structure of Alpha, which has been such a blessed thing. People need to know about Jesus and about the fact that it's true, it's history. It's not made up, it's not myth, it's not legend. But we're not in the education business. And that's a confusion that existed in the church for centuries. Education is only the spin-off of the good news, not the good news itself. It's about something that others can come to experience for themselves. And that's what Lord Soper was getting at when he preached at Hyde Park Corner for 50 or 60 years, not continuously, every week. A heckler in the crowd said, "How do you know there's a God?" And Lord Soper, quite unfazed, came back immediately. "I was talking to him this morning." Can you say that? Can I say that? That's testimony. That's witness. That's witness to something living, something present, something immediate, something that's to do with the here and now. We should tell each other our stories. And you'd be surprised. The people who are sitting here calmly in church and have done so for many years, they could tell you of a time in their life, hopefully, when at the end of their tether, they've cried out to God and God has answered them. And that's why they're here today. That's why they do what they do. That's why they're so anxious to share God's love in practical ways. Because although it's about a story, it's also about serving. Lots of ways in which Liberton Kirk does that. Other ways in which considering doing that in helping families. As Heidi Baker says, love has to look like something. You know, love doesn't exist in a vacuum. So, what's your story? It'd be great to have time for people to turn to each other. And I hope you'd all find something to say. And I hope it would be absolutely true that you can mark a time, maybe not a day, but a time when God came into your life and it's made all the difference. Say to anyone who will listen, this poor man, meaning yourself, this man or woman, this poor man called, and the Lord heard him and saved him from all his troubles. And then say, come and see, taste and see that the Lord is good. Amen, and may God bless his word.